are listening to Into the Comics Cave with your host, comic book heartthrob, Grant Stoy.
Yes, it's me, Grant. I'm back. Hi. Today, it's been a year. I'm still not good at intros, but we're going to keep going. With me today is an old bud that I'm super excited to talk to. Comic book designer, podcasting maven, Batman scholar, Garfield enthusiast. Is there anything I'm missing?
No, I think that's good. That about sums it up.
With me today is Brenda Snell. Hi, Brenda. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am good today. Was like in the 60s, so I can't complain.
Freezing to death. I literally there was a point where I was just so cold. I put on because I have a very low cold tolerance. So I was just what do you mean it's 60 degrees? This is freezing. I had to get out the heating blanket, the heating pad. I had to.
You're wearing long johns. You had a hot water bottle.
I turned the hot tub up to 104.
What's funny about this, both of you listeners, is that Brenda lives in Michigan, where it is cold 9 months of the year.
Yeah, about. I suffer immensely.
Every day is actually agony. Thank you for bringing it up.
I get maybe 2 months where everything's absolutely beautiful. Michigan in the summer, perfect. No notes. It gets to 90 degrees. It's great.
Yeah, is it though?
It's great. The humidity, who doesn't love that?
See, this, you're just making me think of the 4th of July, downtown, where it's just so hot and so muggy, and everyone's just around you being hot and muggy.
Okay, 4th of July in downtown Grand Rapids is miserable because it's a war zone. I was down in my friend's house, 4th of July, I think, or 2/4th of July, whatever, but I was in my friend's house, fireworks everywhere, and it's so hot, and it's just this is chaos, this is awful.
Is the world actually ending now? I know it sort of ended in 2020. Is this Mad Max time?
Is this it? Is this the end?
And this has been another episode of listening to old people talk about things that bother them. Well, you're still a baby compared to me.
I still feel very old.
Well, speaking of your age and your life, Brenda, let's talk about where did you grow up?
I grew up a little bit south of Flint, Michigan, in a city that was built around boats. So I went to a school district that was literally built because it was in proximity to a lake.
Which lake?
Fenton.
All right, there we go.
So yeah, I grew up in Fenton, Michigan. It's a small place. It's kind of if you don't have a boat, you're nothing. And I don't have a boat. I'm not a boat person.
No, it's, there's so much work.
What's the point?
I have no idea, because you have to winterize them and then summarize them. I don't know if that's the proper terminology.
We've already established that it always is snowing here. So you get 2 months out of the year to use your boat. And then what? I mean, it's hard enough opening a swimming pool out here. I did that yesterday where we opened our swimming pool. Oh my God. The way the basement at my parents' house is, because I've been living at my parents' house since the pandemic, I'm a little bit stuck here. anyway, the way the basement is there's a door at the bottom of a hill. And so at the end of the season, we take the pool filter and the pool pump down the hill into the basement for storage. Easy peasy, right?
Right.
But then when spring comes, you have to drag the pool pump and the filter up the hill.
Because manual labor is just the bee's knees right now.
Great. I love it. But... I don't know if anyone else has a pool and knows how big a pool filter is. So the pump is nothing. You can just pick that puppy up and carry it. The filter requires two people to drag up a hill on a refrigerator cart. And not to mention how gross it is to pull the winter cover off the pool, because it's just been sitting on the pool for
leaves and
water. So it's like you wait until it's as dry as possible. This year we misjudged it, and just the sheer amount of leaves was an issue. So getting it off the, you have to get the winter. Sorry, I'm just babbling about the pool now.
This is a pool episode. So keep going.
You have to get the winter cover off the pool without dumping that gunk into the pool. Because if you dump like that leaves and gunk, it's so hard to get the pH and the chlorine all balanced so the pool stays nice and clear and beautiful.
Let's talk a little bit more about pH balance in a pool.
Yeah. Let's talk about like the chlorine shortage. This is riveting stuff.
This is riveting stuff. So, in Fenton, I'm assuming they have comic books of some sort.
Actually, no. We had a comic book store for a while, but it literally didn't open until I was late high school, I think.
No kidding. And
I didn't really go that much. I actually started reading digital comics when I was in college. So I've read, like, you know, a lot of DC and Batman, and I don't like things in a normal way. So I was able to just, like, catch up on like an entire lifetime of like reading comics in a very short period of time. But yeah, digital comics were like a lifesaver, and like also just like the library system. Oh, yeah. Melcat was a lifesaver because Melcat is, it connects every library in Michigan. So if like my local library or my local library system doesn't have a book, I could get it from any other library in Michigan and get it sent to me, which is awesome. That's been like such a lifesaver for like getting books.
Yeah. And and what, I'm trying to put things into context, like what year was that?
I would say that was about 2009.
Okay.
2010.
So not to put any potential crimes on blast, but were these like CBR files that you were reading?
Yeah, none of them were pirated.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not good at pirating things.
You know,
I'm
what?
Not like
you're a better man than I.
Yeah, I'm not like opposed to it. Manga, like on like Manga Fire, like when I was in high school, but like I'm just really paranoid about like viruses and stuff and like ruining my computer. I have like a MacBook that I rely on, and I'm like, I must protect this thing at all costs. None of them were pirated. So like a lot of it was just like, I would ask for gift cards, like iTunes gift cards.
Yeah. And
at that time you could literally just buy like Comixology digital comics just like straight through iTunes. So you could finish an issue and hit next one.
Man, pour one out for a real one.
Yeah, it was a great era. Miss it a lot. But without that, I wouldn't have, like, there's a lot that I wouldn't have gotten to read because I suck at pirating things.
Long story short.
A current resource that I use currently, because the comic book store in Fenton closed before I got back here, it was a while ago. Expanded too quickly.
Yeah,
they expanded too quickly in like too many markets, and then just like it died, like just poof, gone. And there's really nothing else that's replaced it. There's a very small store in Flint. I've been there like once or twice. The selection's like pretty low, but other than that, there's really nothing. There's no good places to get like single issue books around here, which is a bummer.
One thing that we have to make known is that you're a tremendous artist. And when did that start? Yeah. Well, you're welcome. when about did you start finding like an interest in the arts?
I'd say it was probably in like high school, like that's because that's when they're like really like, you got to figure out what you're going to do.
Okay.
And like, my parents always wanted me to be a pharmacist, but like, here's the thing about me is that I am not good at science and or math at all. So that like, that wasn't going to work. And I'm also the kind of person where it's like, I have to be like very interested in what I'm doing or I simply will not do it. So I was thinking of like, how can I like put like kind of like more creative things into a potential career. And that's when I was like, oh, I could be like a graphic designer. At that time, I was also like, I could be a web designer, but like web design has changed so much since then. I could not keep up.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I feel like in high school was like kind of when I was able to really take more art classes and kind of lean more into that. And then I ended up going to college for graphic design, and that's what also what led me to Grand Rapids, because I ended up attending the art school in Grand Rapids.
Was that Kendall?
Yep, I went to the Kendall College of Art and Design in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I think I technically, what is my degree? I think I'm like looking at my degree kind of just sits on a table over here. I think my degree is in digital media and design, I think is like what my degree is actually called.
So were you initially drawn to digital art to begin with, or did you ever dabble with traditional stuff?
I did dabble with traditional stuff just because you have to learn the basics. And I found that I'm just not very good at things that you can't like kind of like do multiple times and like have multiple passes on, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
A lot of my art goes through like multiple, like, you know, like minor edits and stuff. Like my hands kind of like are a little unstable sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to have like the stabilizer that like my Cintiq allows, or like that my iPad has, those tools have allowed me to really hone an art style. Whereas like with traditional media, one, there's like also a hurdle of like having the space and the time and the supplies for that. Whereas with like, you know, with my digital art, all you just needed was like the program and a drawing tablet. And I was a pretty early adopter of having a drawing tablet.
Oh, nice.
Because I feel like they're like a lot more like accessible now. Like you can get one for like maybe $50 or sometimes even less when they're on sale.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what my first one cost, but it was like, I've never seen anyone else use this tablet. It's so archaic. And I still have it because I never throw any technology away. And the tablet that I used throughout college was my second tablet, which is just a Wacom Bamboo Fun, which I still absolutely adore that thing. It just stopped being like working with my operating system.
Okay. And when did this... your pursuit of like digital art and your love of comics start to intersect?
I would say I took a comic class when I was going to the University of Michigan in Flint. I took a comic class with Ryan Clater. I don't know if that's a name that you've ever heard of.
No.
He's kind of like an independent comic creator. He does like a lot of work with like the comic program at Michigan State University.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, you know, he's like, he knows comics very well. Mm-hmm. And with that class, he taught me like the nitty, this was maybe one of the hardest classes I've ever done, but he taught like the nitty gritty basics of like the language of comics. So like straight up like Scott McCloud's like understanding comics and like the minutiae of how a word bubble set up and like how panels work, and it was all just like very fascinating. So that class was incredibly difficult, but like what I learned in that class has allowed me to like not only be able to like critique the comics that I'm reading, but allow me to like incorporate my art within that language, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I understand a comics book is just such a fundamental book to have for anyone who wants to read comics or even make them. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Just like the way that panels work, or like the language of speech bubbles, like how, like, you know, speech bubbles aren't like complete oblong circles. They're like squared a little bit to be able to fit more text, and like,
yeah,
the way that they flow and fit into panels. There's so much that goes into it that is just like an incredible language of its own.
Have you ever tried lettering?
I really kind of want to get into lettering. I did some lettering for the class. I need to take a like there's like that one website that offers classes from time to time. I need to checking in with that and take a lettering class so I know like more so the workflow of it.
Yeah.
Like what program to use, like how exactly to set it up, like what the settings are. Those are the kinds of things that I would need to know. I am interested in lettering. I just have not had a chance to really kind of zero in and hone that skill.
Well, I don't know if this will make you want to do it more or less, but some of the letters I've talked to what they like to do is when they're setting up, you know, where they want the bubbles to go, they'll draw dicks. so like the artists of the books can see like, oh, there's a dick in this layer. That's pretty funny. So you could draw dicks yourself on someone else's page.
I love that.
One thing I also wanted to quiz you about is, yeah, I don't know if you do much of this anymore, but you graded comics, or you were learning to grade comics for a bit, correct?
Yes. So I worked at a comic book store for 5 years. And during that time, I taught myself how to grade comics. I essentially taught myself how to do it. Like, my boss like gave me like a book and was like, here you go. And, a bunch of like old Gold Key, like low stake books to grade. And so I did that, and I like taught myself like all of like the different, I watched videos. I just like, I deep dived into this. And then they did like a little test and they were like, you did great. And I was like, thank God. So stressful.
I bet. And what are things you look for when you're grading comics? I know like page color, if it's like yellowed or like dog-eared or stuff like that, but that's not quite the nitty-gritty though.
Yeah, it can get very specific. So like newer stuff is super easy to grade. You're just like, oh, it's got like some like page bends, or it's got like the spine is kind of wrinkled. With the older stuff, it gets down to like how many wrinkles are there, how big is like a notch that's missing. Like, you have to measure it to be like very exact. And it's all detailed in the Overstreet Guide, which is the guide to grading comics. It comes out every year, and there's like a specific version of the Overstreet that goes into the specifics of what each grade entails. Like, this one can have like tape in it, or this one can be missing staples, or, you know, missing staples is a big one, or rusted staples. Like, that will like really dump down a grading of a book.
Oh geez.
Yeah.
Did you ever find people who were like trying to replace staples?
No, I never had that happen. Mostly you just get the people who are like, I know what this book is worth, and you look at them and you're like, you don't.
No one's really interested in this Archie meets Punisher.
Like, I know that the Overstreet says $50, but who's gonna buy it?
No, I'm curious about this because there's a lot of stigma about women working in comic book stores. Mm-hmm. Did you ever encounter someone, whether they wanted their book graded or not, or were trying to trade something in, where they came in thinking they knew more than you?
Oh, yes. All the time.
And little did they know that you know everything.
Yeah, I have to know everything. It's part of my personality. Yeah, so I would have like customers like bring books in and try to talk to like one of my male coworkers instead of me. And they were always like really awesome and would just like literally direct the customer to be like, you have to talk to Brenda. Brenda knows what they're talking about. So my coworkers were always like really awesome and like redirecting, like, hey, you have to talk to this person, and you know, that's it.
Oh my gosh. That must have just been so gratifying.
Yeah. To be like, like, I'm a like short little 5-foot gremlin of a human being. Like, ha ha, yes.
So what would you like to know, stranger?
No, we don't want your crumpled up old porno comic.
Oh, did people actually try and sell you guys porn comics?
Sometimes. The one time I had this lady bring it in, it was like her dad's collection, which is already kind of awkward. But yeah, she was very cool about it. She's like, I know this stuff is a lot, and if you don't want to look at it, you don't have to. And me being like, ma'am, I've seen some shit. I will grade these for you. I took it upon myself. One, grading porno comics is very hard.
Really?
Yeah, because there's multiple, like, very small print runs, because it's all independent. So there's stuff that's, like, not documented by the Overstreet. But even, like, you know, this lot had some Arkrum in it. Like,
oh my gosh.
Even that was difficult, because there's many different like printings and very small different versions. And also that stuff is hell to look at. Like, so this woman brought in this short box. She's like, you don't have to. And I was like, I can do it. Just, I've seen some shit. And I'm like in the office and I'm just sitting there with my head in my hands, like, I see one more really large dongaroonie, I'm gonna lose it. Like,
when people come back and you're like face first in this book, trying to like crying and just being upset, what are you doing? Grading.
This is my job. So I like handed it back to her. I was like, you do have some, like, because like our crumb is worth a lot of money, and I was like, you do have some books that might be worth money in the right hands. Unfortunately, I have to give this back to you.
Oh my gosh, that poor lady. I hope she found a buyer somewhere.
I hope so, because some of them were worth money. Oh. To someone.
Okay, so right now in your illustrious comic career, we are at grading comics, working in a comic book store, and then you start veering into comic book design stuff. How did that come about?
I would say that was you.
Oh.
So when was that first issue of SideQuest? Was
It was around the time the pandemic kicked off.
Yeah, so like let's say like March, April, spring of 2020, you reached out to me to do, you at first it was the whole cover. And I like, you know, kind of did a couple things, and then eventually we decided like, oh, we'll have like an illustration and then do the D&D kind of playbook design around that. And that worked out really cool.
Yeah, dude. Personally, like your designs on those, I know it's pretty biased, but it's still one of my favorite cover designs because it just looks so cool. And I swear, it's probably ill-founded, but it seemed like a lot of different other comic books start coming up with their own.
I noticed that too.
Isn't that weird?
Probably had been done before, but there were quite a few that were coming out after that first issue of SideQuest kind of got circulated.
I'm not saying that you kickstarted a re-interest in companion book lookalikes, but I'm insinuating it.
Yeah, the timing was just lined up.
But then you started working with Wells Thompson and Dalton Shannon, correct?
Yeah, which has been great. Like, I did the logo for, what was the first one?
Was it Frankenstein?
It was Frankenstein. Frankenstein the Unconquered. I did that logo. And then after that, I redid the logo for Mechaton. Kind of gave that like a little bit of like a new feel to it. And then I just finished up with Depths, which is Wells' graphic novel that he's currently kickstarting.
Yeah.
The logo for Depths took me so long, though.
It looks good, though.
Thank you. It went through like four iterations.
Yeah, looking at the, I can't remember if it was Dalton that, or no, it was Wells that posted the different like alternate logos that you went through. They all looked really cool.
We went with was definitely the right one to go with, but they all had like their own. Like the first one, which is like that black and white one with like that one was like off base for the book that, you know, that Wells was making. But my logic to that, I was thinking like underwater, I was thinking like 80s, like kind of like old technology sort of underwater. I don't know why I was on that tangent with that one. So that's where that came from. I was like Epcot, Living Seas vibes. That was not what they were going
for. And then you went to Captain EO designs and then get Figment.
Living with the land. Universe of energy.
is the title design something that you want to keep doing?
So I really like doing it. There's sometimes where I get stuck and I'm just like, oh no, and then eventually I work my way out of it.
And before we move on to more goofier things, I'd be remiss if I didn't have you talk about your Garfield zines.
Yes.
And like the incredible, what is it, crochet or knitting?
Crochet.
Yeah, like the stuff that you're doing on both those aspects are just incredible.
Thank you. I started crocheting a little bit over 10 years ago. I want to say that was like 2011 is when I started crocheting.
Okay.
And I was just like, I want to crochet Pokemon. I don't know what possessed me to do this, but I like watched YouTube videos and I got a little book that said like how to make amigurumi, which are like the little plush crochet things. My first one looks really bad. I still have it. It's a Vaporeon. It's the most miserable looking thing on the face of planet Earth. It looks so sad.
But it's priceless.
Like, this is where I started and this is where I am now. So like I just have kept making them, and I go to artist alleys and I sell them. I do like a lot of possums now. Those are very popular. lately my thing has been, cause now there's like new types of yarn that are coming out that are like soft, fuzzy, cool. So now my latest thing has been make things very big. I actually bought a Vulpix from me that was like a couple feet, like two and a half feet tall.
Oh my gosh.
And I've made a bigger one. I made this creature called a possumpede, which is like a very long possum with like 10 legs.
That sounds horrible. Continue.
It's horrifying. But I made a possumpede and I made a very big one, which is about 4 feet long, I think, from nose to tail. It's very cursed. but people love it. People love the smaller ones, which are about like a foot long. Like, mm-hmm. And I have like customers who are like, he's like a little baguette and I carry him around and I love that. Cause they're like tubes.
Oh gosh.
They're so cursed. Yeah. Lately big things. Right now I'm crocheting an Ampharos, which is a Pokemon, and it's about 3 feet tall right now.
Oh geez.
Yeah. It's pretty big. I didn't think it was going to be that big. And then I was like, oopsie. It's big.
Can't stop now.
Yep, too late.
And the Garfield zines.
The Garfield zines. So 2020, early 2020, so pre-pandemic, I got into Detroit Zine Fest. It was the first time Detroit was going to have a zine fest. And I was like, I got to make some zines. And I was like, oh, I'll do like Garfield's different cryptids. So like I got it all ready for Detroit Zine Fest in 2020. And then it got canceled. Because of the pandemic. So I sat on this zine with like Garfield is like different cryptids. There's like Garfield is like the Mothman and Garfield is the Fresno Nightcrawler and is Loch Ness. And when I finally like debuted it at Grand Rapids Zine Fest in 2021, it was like immediately this like really big hit. This zine has changed my life. Like I was selling so many of those, like even like this last year for Christmas, I sold so many like on my Etsy, like they were just flying. And then I did a follow-up last year for Grand Rapids Zine Fest, which had 5 more Garfield cryptids.
Oh my gosh.
And that's been really successful, and I've made keychains and button pins and the stickers, and it's kind of snowballed into this whole thing where I just draw Garfield, different Garfields. I drew a Furby Garfield. I drew an Among Us Garfield, which is very popular. So I've got more Garfields I want to draw too. So I want to do like a whole volume that's like Garfield yokai.
So okay.
Like, yeah, Japanese mythology. So like the Kitsune and the really short snake. I think it's because I can't remember its name. It's like a snake, but it's really short. the kappa and like those guys.
Oh my gosh, dude, that would be amazing.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I just got the confirmation that I got into Grand Rapids Zine Fest this year.
Nice.
So hopefully, not gonna make any promises, but hopefully it'll be out by then.
When is that by chance?
August 19th.
I'm glad you checked.
I'm glad. And you had a 9 in it. JFAX is June 9th. And that's an anime convention in Grand Rapids, and I'll also be there.
Oh, man, that's coming up quick.
I know. I am, like, just pumping out crochet things, like, ridiculously, because my design slate is empty right now, so I'm just working.
Oh, my gosh. When you said pumping out things, all I could think about was in Dragon Age, not Origins, the follow-up to that.
Two? Dragon Age 2?
No, it was like the little between a between game between Origins and 2. I remember playing it, and that's when you find like the queen something that like.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Is it the birth mother?
Yeah. So you're like, yeah. You get this like Garfield zine, creepy possum peed birth mother.
Done crocheting, being like 15 Mothmen, and I'm like, I never want to see one of these again.
So, Brenda Snow, yes. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Imagine waking up tomorrow, and all birds, like across the globe, instead of feathers, they had human hair.
Would that I thought be- you were going to say lips, because you are known for the bird lips.
I mean, that's in a much better world. A much better world than we currently live in.
Instead of feathers, no, that means they couldn't fly, though, if it's human hair.
But what if they could? Would that be fucked up?
I don't think it'd actually be that fucked up, because, like, cats just have hair. Squirrels just have hair. But I don't really think it'd be, like, I think something fucked up would be if my cat had hair, or had... Sorry, he does have hair. Feathers. Sorry, Angel. He's very offended that I insinuated he didn't have hair. He has beautiful, wonderful, soft fur.
Colored like midnight.
Yes, he's beautiful.
Like, what if the bird's human hair was, like, kind of long?
Imagining this, okay, this is kind of hell. Imagine like a penguin, just like a fluffy, hairy penguin.
Would that be kind of fucked up?
Watching them swim would be pretty fucked up.
Oh, that would be gross.
Yeah.
Or like, how would a hummingbird even look if it had like a little bit of like its human hair was like 3 inches long?
It'd just be like a ball of hair. Like, because, like, they flit around, so it looked like little Karibo from Yu-Gi-Oh! I was going to say the Pokemon from Yu-Gi-Oh! You know, like, the little guy.
Ooh, don't cross those streams.
The little fella.
And now that we've tackled that, we're going to go to the 5 questions we ask every guest. Now, again, I haven't asked anyone these in about a year. So if I screw them up, let's pretend I didn't. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number 1. What is your favorite sound effect?
Favorite sound effect is that violin sound from Kitchen Nightmares.
Please describe it.
Okay, so in Kitchen Nightmares starring Gordon Ramsay. Whenever, like, something goes wrong, there's, like, this, like, strings kind of effect that goes when something goes wrong. He's like, it's raw!
Is that where he would call someone a donkey and then do that thing?
Yes.
Now, how do you think that would look as, like, a sound effect on a comic book page? How would you spell that?
What would that look like? I think it would be like a screer. It's almost an indescribable noise.
That was 10 out of 10, no notes. Number 2. What is something about the medium of sequential art that you love?
I love that... Just this setup of panels can do so much to set pacing. So you have to read it at a certain pace. You can't like just, so when like words are just like written on a page, you just kind of usually just I barrel through them because that's just how I am. But with sequential art for like very poignant, like emotional moments, if the artist and the writer are working together very well, they can slow it down with the use of like more panels or like differently sized panels to make you pause and really take in the emotion.
Yeah. Well, that's perfectly put. To go to the other side of the coin, what is something about comics that you dislike?
Oh my God. This little, me and my co-host on Secret Histories and Nerd Mysteries, my podcast, Austin and I were talking about this morning, and I hate how death in superhero comics is just used as like a quick cash grab these days. Yep. There's one that like just came out. I'm not going to spoil it. It's pretty but easy to find out.
It's so it dumb though.
Yeah, it is. You know, like, this is also not a very old phenomenon. The death of Superman is really where it all started. And before that, death was a lot more permanent in comics. Mm-hmm. But ever since Superman came back, anyone can come back. Even if it lasts like a couple years. So like when Bruce Wayne died, like that, they were able to, the first time, they were able to drag it out for a couple years that first time. But like, he always comes back. Everyone always comes back.
Or what's worse is they'll let someone be dead for like a year or two, and they just bring in like different versions of that character to fill that void.
Yes.
Like when Wolverine died, they're like, oh,
I was going to say Wolverine.
That drove me insane. I'm like, oh, old man Logan's here. How about that? Wow. We can have a Wolverine.
Yeah, that was painful.
On to a brighter question. What is your favorite curse word that's not a curse word?
Oh. Let me think. I really like saying son of a biscuit.
I was going to say, it's kind of hard not to smile when you say that.
Right? It's like, and also it's the expectation, like you kind of like start saying like the son of it, and everyone's like, oh, you're gonna say bitch. Like, and then you don't, you say biscuit, and they're like, huh? Like imagine that was like the Tim Allen noise.
No, please, what is the noise? Tim Allen noise.
It's like when Tim Allen, he's huh? I can't do it.
I know what you're going for, but that sounded like you were trying to throw up.
That's what happens when I think of Tim Allen.
Oh my gosh. Michigan royalty, Tim Allen.
Oh, goodness. Former drug dealer, Tim Allen.
if you haven't heard this before, this is the shocking revelation. Look up Tim Allen and drugs.
This is true. He ratted out all his friends so he could avoid prison time.
Why'd you even invoke the Tim Allen noise?
I'm sorry, it just came to mind. I'm a Michigander, like every and a 90s kid, you know, like just Home Improvement was always on. You couldn't escape it. Home Improvement was just always there.
Quick side question. Do you feel that Home Improvement was meta?
Meta in what way?
It had a show within a show.
Oh, yeah, I suppose that does fit the definition of meta that we know of today. I forgot. Home Improvement wasn't in my, so when the pandemic started, I just started watching sitcoms. I watched a bonkers amount of sitcoms. I watched WKRP in Cincinnati. Oh, nice. I watched Taxi. Mm-hmm. I watched Frasier, all of Cheers, all of Golden Girls, all of Friends, all of Dharma and Greg.
Well, that's something.
It was definitely a show. So I was just watching sitcoms, like I couldn't stop. But Home Improvement was not one of them.
I'm so sorry. Okay, let's go to the last question. Let's. I'm sorry. Okay. Bad news. Bad news, Brenda. You were trying to do the Tim Allen noise. I'm sorry.
Oh, yuck.
Goofy as Tim Allen. Oh, you? So, you you go to heaven. Tim Allen's there to greet you. You go to heaven, and you walk in. You're looking around, and then you see some like old dude in a like a tank top, and he's at a drafting table, and it's Jacob Kurtzberg, aka Jack Kirby himself. What do you hope that he says to you?
I just want him to cuss me out.
Unprompted?
Like, he, like, sees me, and he just says, like, what are you looking at, fuck face? That just feels on brand. Like, oh, my God, Jack Kirby, I'm so honored, thanks. And then I, like, ring up my friends who are still alive, and I'm like, can you believe it, Jack Kirby? I just call me a fuck face. And then, like, Austin's just like, what the fuck? You're dead.
How are you doing this? And then they go, So Brenda, thank you for putting up with all that.
This is great.
Yes, now is the time where you should plug the Etsy store, the cons, and work that you're doing, and socials, and go.
Awesome. Let's begin. So I'll be at JFAX in Grand Rapids. It's the DeVos Entertainment Center. I don't quite know the exact name of it. It's at the DeVos Center, attached to the Amway Grand in Grand Rapids, Michigan, June 9th. And then I'll be at Grand Rapids Scene Fest at the Fountain Street Church on August 19th. After that, I have a podcast with my good friend Austin called Secret Histories of Nerd Mysteries. Yes, new episodes will be coming, I promise.
But the back catalog is really good too.
Really good too. You can just find like any topic that you like. Some of my favorites are episode 69, which is on fan fiction. And even any of our Chuck E. Cheese ones are pretty good.
Anything that involves like the decrepit remains of past pop culture,
which is what we specialize in. You can find me on Etsy as Brenda Makes Things, and then you can find me on Twitter as Batman and Sobbin, BatmanSobbin.
Brenda, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. It was so good to talk to you.
Same here.
This has been a Comic Book Yeti production. You can find new episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and anywhere podcasts stream. For more information on the Comic Book Yeti, please visit comicbookyeti.com. And for more of Grant, visit grantstoy.com. Or on Twitter @GrantAndStuff.